Well, good morning, and it's Margaret O'Connor here with Community Matters. I do apologise for the last, I think it's about 17 minutes of transmission problems, but we're back on air thanks to just our incredibly dedicated volunteers, in particular Mike Keane, who's gone into the system and figured out what the problems are. We've been having a few over the weekend. We don't know whether it's related to the crowd strike dramas of last Friday, but there's certainly been some technical issues. We do apologise, but I'm really delighted to have our garden guru, Ned McDowell, in the studio with me. Good morning, Ned.
Good morning, Margaret. Great to be here as usual.
You've been a tower of strength. Ned, we're just going to charge along and try and make up the time. You've got, this is the time for doing one of those jobs that some people adore and others dread. Tell us all about pruning roses, Ned.
Well, today it's all about rose pruning.
Right.
As a subject, it's pretty unsexy, but it has to be done.
I think it's great. I love pruning roses.
I do too, yeah. Yep. It's wonderful. So we're in the depth of winter.
Yep.
Beautiful day, though, and it's going to be a beautiful day all this week. And so the great conundrum arrives of when and how hard to prune your roses.
Hard, and what, roundabout, well, that I can't answer that. I'm not the garden guru.
Anyway, there are so many controversial or robust divided discussions about how hard and when to do it. So every winter I prune a lot of roses. I have about 60 to 70 of my own. And in my heyday, I would do about another 1,000 in other people's gardens.
Do you wear gloves?
Never.
Is that right?
Never. Ah. I can't feel my way through it.
Yeah.
If I don't have the feeling of touch, then I just can't do it. So, you know, a bit of blood on the hands, is okay?
It's rose pruning.
It just shows it's a battle.
That's right.
Yep. So anyway, I've learnt many, many things about how to do it. And it's all pretty fundamental. Anyway, we come to what I call the 11th commandment of rose pruning.
Yeah.
Most people have their own respective opinion or rules on how to do it, and they will rarely, if ever, deviate from them.
Yeah, so it encourages rigidity of thought, rose pruning.
Well, for most, they're just, you know, this is how I've done it from the day one.
Yep.
And I think this is how it should be done the day one. So it's like these rules have become immortalized or forever etched in stone, sacrosanct, a universal law.
Yep.
So, and this 11th commandment hypothesis all hangs on the possibility or probability of late harsh frost, which will affect the new leaf shoots of roses.
Yeah.
So it is a gamble with Mother Nature, a bit like Russian roulette, but, I mean, you've got 5 chances out of 1 to get it right. And you never know when Mother Nature's going to throw down a really heavy frost.
Well, we had a sort of medium frost last night. So, I mean, but we expect it now.
But they're light, you know. It's 3 to 2 minus degrees is okay. It's when you have a late one, which might be minus 6, minus 8.
Right.
Sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But this is very, very rare that time of year. Mm-hmm. I'm sticking my head out here. I've never really seen in my 40 years a badly frosted rose, new leaf rose.
Oh, okay.
And if they were, that they didn't recover.
Oh, so they do frost badly, but they will recover.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or if you have a succession of mild frosts or even medium frost, the leaves seem to get used to the whole thing.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So for me, when is it ripe to prune roses? Mm-hmm. Well, it's the day when I have time, which will be today.
Yeah.
The winter weather is reasonable, which is today. My council green bin is completely empty. And most importantly, just when you're totally fed up with a whole lot of rose ugly. Now, with their straggly, wild, whiplashing barb branches. Right. And you just can't weed and fertilise underneath. I mean, you're just over them.
Yeah.
So this is today or the end of this month, July, is the opportune time. Many people say in a cold climate like ours, it should be sometime in August, even right till the end of August.
Right. But what you're saying is July's okay because you think that our roses up here can take it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that if you cut them back down.
When you have time and you feel inspired how to do it.
Yeah.
When to do it.
Yeah. So don't fret too much about this notion that if you bring them into leaf too early, then a subsequent frost will kind of destroy them.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not something that you need to worry about perhaps as much as traditionally has been the case.
Mm. That's correct. Yep. Right. So there are four real reasons why, or fundamental reasons why we prune roses. Number one is to clean and cut out all the congested inside branches. You create an open vase shape and this allows optimum light and air circulation within it.
Mm-hmm.
And thus this minimises susceptibility to diseases such as black spot and powdery mildew.
And that's because by opening up into that vase shape, you allow a lot of air circulation.
Correct. And sun.
And sunlight, okay.
And so you prune out all the old damage and disease root, dead wood.
Right.
And this transfers the rose's energy to improve the new health of the fresh new flowering branches.
Right.
And then you prune back the growth to an outward facing bud. Most people know this, cutting more than about half a centimetre above the growth. Bud.
I'm sorry.
And this creates an angle.
Did you say half a centimetre?
Yeah, above an outward facing bud.
Right, okay.
And make sure it's slightly sloping away mm-hmm. so that the moisture can drain off it instead of sitting there like a pool of water.
You've got to think like a plant. Even though it's a small surface, it can retain that moisture that you don't want there festering away.
Also, many people, when after the pruned and a bare of foliage, people spray with lime sulphur to combat black spot and scale.
Oh, okay. Does that work?
Yeah. Well, it helps minimise the problem.
Right.
I never do it, largely because I'm just downright too lazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've just had enough after I've pruned all the roses.
But if you choose to do that, it does have some effect. And it presumably lime sulphur is a product you can go to your nursery and say, I want lime sulphur.
Very much. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's on all, nearly every nursery will have them.
And are you spraying the whole of the bush or just the bits that you've pruned off? I mean, I have
everything left on the bush after you've pruned it.
Right. So it's a treatment for the entire plant, not just
all the branches.
I think I have been known to paint things on pruned areas. With dubious success.
Yeah, no, it needs a good spray, And a lot of people have scale as well, which would be a big problem. They'll be up and down the trunk, the bare branches.
Mm-hmm.
And also...
What does that look like?
They're like little white dots.
Yeah, right, waxy.
Yeah, yeah, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so spraying with lime sulphur will also help that. But one of the reasons I don't, other than being totally lazy, why I don't spray is that I use a pelletized seaweed and fish tonic throughout the whole year, maybe 8 applications, which it seems to be quite a lot or excessive, but it's great. And thus these pellets strengthen the health of the plant.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's less susceptible to getting diseases. So I basically just don't get any black spot or scale.
Wow.
So I don't, as well as being lazy, I don't really have to do it.
Right, okay. So, I mean, you're not actually lazy because you're bending over and putting that pelletised seaweed and fish substance, which is basically the pellets you're putting on the ground under the roses.
Yeah, it also creates better root development, better soil, the whole business. Mm. So the plant doesn't get under stress.
Yeah, yeah. So
when the plant's under stress, the diseases come right in.
Yeah, yeah.
If you are having trouble with black spot, during the year, you can spray with a potion of 1 part milk, 9 parts water.
Uh-huh.
So if you jump on your black spot early in the season with that, that will probably get rid of it.
So what is it, the calcium in the milk?
Not sure.
Oh, okay.
No idea.
Yeah, so you just mix that up and then put in a little spray bottle and go for it.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. yeah. Mm. So now we get to how hard to prune.
Oh, I think I said hard.
Mm.
That's not necessarily the case.
Yep, yep. So I had this little thing in my head philosophy that And it might sound a whole lot of silly, but it's great from the outset if you determine your relationship with roses.
Oh, okay.
They are your partners in landscape design, they are your friends, but you've got to work out who's the boss. Who's the boss in the garden? who's the top dog, the master of it all, the monarch who reigns supreme?
Is it Ned the Gardener or is it those gorgeous plants? Yes.
Well, Ned the Gardener is top dog. You've got to ascertain that from the beginning.
Right.
You are the top dog and never, ever forget it.
And so you would recommend basically coming to terms with the fact that you're the boss of the wash in your garden and roses will try to undermine you perhaps.
Yeah, well, who's the master? You're the one in control.
Yeah.
So for me, you walk right up to them with the strength of your convictions, armoured with a steely determination. You stand astride your rose.
Right.
And off you go. Cut, saw and snip away.
All right.
Mm.
But how much? How much seriously though, Ned?
I would think, for me, it's by a half, two-thirds or three-quarters. Actually, I do it by about three-quarters. You've got to remember, unless you've pruned hard in the last summer, you've got a full year's growth.
Right.
And you want to bring it down. So my policy is no rose should be left with a height higher than your own knee.
Oh.
And that's pretty low.
It is. I'll tell the listeners, you're not short, but you're not tall either, so you're not super tall.
No.
For a fella.
It's only a couple of centimetres difference, but you know, and it's tall and shorty.
Your long shanks.
Yeah.
But so they can't get above your knee.
That's correct.
Right, okay.
And the reason for that is I just don't like rose bushes, but resemble lollipops or skyscrapers or long series of Eiffel Towers. I don't want to see old wood at the bottom with no growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I want growth right from the bottom and flowers right for the to the bottom. So it's like a rounded bush.
Right, okay. So you're talking about hybrid teas here as well as?
Hybrid teas will always grow up higher, elongated stems,
but
still whack it right down.
Right, so it doesn't matter what if it's a floribunda or, but well, I mean that would apply especially to well it would apply to everything obviously, but the hybrid teas are just going to go up.
Yep. So the lower you cut them down, then the lower the oomph of the new stem will be.
And your flowers will be more sort of accessible.
Yeah,
and of course on your floribundas, which includes David Austin types, they're gonna bush out and flower sort of under your gaze rather than far away from it.
Too right, yeah. As I said, you want to get them down. You want to have the whole bush perfectly rounded with flowers the whole way.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I once worked. Sorry, here I once worked for a rather grand lady many years ago.
Yeah,
and before she would commence her day of rose pruning, she would fortify herself with a very large glass of mulled wine.
Okay. Sounds like a really good idea, actually.
Well, it's cold, you know.
Yeah. You should have a few rituals around this to give you the courage.
That's right. So she always carried deep in her pocket a hip flask, which I imagine also contained the mulled wine. She explained, I remember, in her later years, but since she was in her later years, was an aid to combating the cold and assisted her with the vital energy necessary to commence and endure a long day of labour.
Yeah, that's actually so wrong because alcohol always lowers the body temperature, just throwing that in because I've experienced that from certain wilderness experiences, nothing to do with roses.
Oh, but, really?
You know, if you believe that a hip flask of mulled wine is going to fortify you and raise your body temperature, well, then good for you, but it's not scientific.
Right. Well, okay. That actually takes me down to the 13th commandment, but I'm still on the 12th.
Okay.
12th commandment. How high or how low should we do it?
Back
to the grand lady.
Yeah, yeah.
With her little mulled wine. Very sadly, she never offered me a single drop.
Well, I mean, Ned,
I think she
limits.
I think she considered myself too young. I was pretty young in my early 20s.
Yeah, yeah.
And did not want to encourage me to have any future bad habits.
No, I'm sure that's the case.
But in hindsight, I realised that it was an absolute useless gesture. Because when I go back over my roses, say I've done 30 in a row.
Yeah.
And when you start on your first rose, no matter your convictions and your silly determination who's top dog, the first rose is never harsh enough.
You're a little tender-hearted at the outset.
Yeah, and by the end you become ruthless.
So at
the end of the day, after I've done my roses, I go and get myself a nice drop of red wine, a glass, and then I go over them all, and you can see the mistakes or things that you've done.
That's very interesting. So you meet out. I mean, I would have green tea with, you know, a big dollop of honey, but yeah, red wine would do the trick too.
I'm trying to promote alcoholism, but it really helps. Well, yourself and truly the roses.
Yep.
So we've never done that in the height.
And you can walk high. You can, as you're surveying and adding to your brutality, I guess, but basically you're planning these, you know, you're making them strong and sturdy for the next season. And honestly, there's less leaf at that point, isn't there, to be subjected to the next frost?
That's correct. So that's pretty well done and dusted. Fertilising is quite important. So that pelletised seaweed and fish should be a carpet.
We're not advertising any products, but one of them is humongous.
Oh, naughty word.
Yeah, that's right.
Sea mungus, yes, pelletised seaweed and fish, and this will, again,
there's many, many products of that type, but that's, yeah.
No, actually, it's the only one.
Is it?
It's the only one in pellets.
Oh, right.
Well, everyone else is in concentrate, a fluid-based concentrate.
Right.
Nothing comes in the pellets.
Okay.
So if you get a concentrate which you mix with water, it's a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
It in no way it's improved the quality of your soil. Where the pellets, as they break down, improves the soil.
It's a slow release.
It holds its own weight in water.
Right.
It creates a more, like, cake-like soil.
Consistency in the soil.
It invites all the bacteria you need. Right. And it's a health tonic. And it's a slow, slow, slow release.
Right.
So I've already done my sea mungus thing on my roses, started about 2 weeks ago.
Right. So you've studied them. You've got them sort of braced for the impact of your pruning moment.
And the fact that the roots then will be really healthy in the soil. So when you put on the fertiliser, which I will start next week, the roots are able to start taking them in.
Right.
And then if you use a pelletised rose fertiliser, as it slowly breaks down, it'll take about 3 to 4 weeks to hit down to the roots, get to the roots. So that's about the time you want to start your plants going on.
So that's really interesting. So there are a lot of things to think about in when you choose the kind of medium for delivering these aids to your plants, whether it's your fertilizer or your soil conditioner, which is what the seaweed and fish, pelletized seaweed and fish is. Yep. Okay, got it.
So then we come to what I call the 13th commandment, which you sort of jumped into at the beginning or a minute ago. Thou shalt never have a closed mind on how to do it. Mm. No one's God. No one knows all the answers. So you can, if you like, disregard everything I've said.
Yeah.
But at least to take it in, you'll be getting a few facts of knowledge about things. But, you know, it all depends on how you view the world and how you view your roses. And you should always be open to new ideas.
Yes. I did hear something years ago which fascinated me. And that was that somebody compared cattle getting into their garden and chewing down their roses with chainsaw sort of effect on hedge roses, and they decided that the cattle did no better or worse a job than the chainsaw. Well, there was no material difference, you know. It was just, but I mean, that's when you've got a lot of roses, I suppose, in their hedging, and people are not. I don't know. Well, is a chainsaw, a small, sort of small chainsaw, an option?
It'll unevenly break your stems at the top.
Yeah.
But that's when diseases will get in.
Yeah.
See, they're shattering the stem with the blades of a.
Yeah, the chain.
Yeah.
Okay. Righto. So you would still say, you know, carefully snip and use your shot.
And results, sure. Just on health.
And do you have any religious views about, you know, dipping your secateurs and into your pruning items?
I do, yep. Yep.
So into
Methos and some metho or something, let them sit there for a moment, then try to wipe them off with a cloth, get them nice and clean.
What, for the next between bushes?
No, I'm too lazy for that. At the beginning of the day and the end of the day.
All right, okay. So just make sure you've got a clean start and finish. Yep.
So I'll be doing my rose pruning today after I get back from Walker.
Uh-huh.
I'll have a good, I'll probably get 25 done today, and then just after next week when I've finished work, I'll do the rest.
Fantastic.
Anyway, so enough about rose pruning. I thought I'd talk about one plant, probably my favourite rose of all time.
Okay.
And that is Madame Alfred Carrier.
Uh-huh.
Now, she is probably the greatest of all white climbing roses.
Mm. And she's big, like she goes far and wide, doesn't she?
She can, yeah. I love her unconditionally. Without her, my life would be, my garden would be a whole lot less.
Mm.
Now, if heaven did exist or does exist, this would be the rose you would meet as you enter the pearly gates.
Oh, really?
She will adorn and grace each side of the welcome entrance.
Ah.
Funnily, most gardeners have never heard of her.
Oh.
If you go online or better to a nursery, you can probably find a few. They may get 10 to 20 in a year each.
Wow. So they're kind of rare now. And they're an older, very well-known.
They're old, yeah. Well, she was first released, believe it or not, 1879.
That's why you find them on a lot of historic buildings.
Yes, or very old gardens, especially in the New England. 1879, so what's that? 1840, 150 years old. Mm. Now, Rosarians still regard her as the best white climbing rose ever. There's never been another one in that 140 years to replace her.
Mm.
And that is really saying something. Margaret showing a picture of her, on her mobile. Pretty good. That one's a little bit more pink in the centre.
So the ones that I've just looked up, close up, they've got a really beautiful sort of soft flesh, you know, it's not a porcelainy, very pale pink. But from a distance, those roses look white and they're a bit floppy looking.
But the flowers or how they hang?
They sit up. The flowers sit up beautifully, but they're a loose petaled rose. Would you agree with that?
Well, they're a double. No, they're a double flower.
Okay.
We'll see.
And I think they're loose enough that the bees would, once they're out, they'd be quite appeal. They'd be quite accessible for bees. That's what I always look for in roses now. Not those really tightly furled roses, but ones where the bees can have a bit of a shot.
Anyway, why is she so supreme?
Right,
many years ago, you remember Auchinleck, Margaret? This is probably the Auchinleck garden outside of Armidale. This is where I actually first met you.
It is.
We were looking at a purple gate that I planted. And you weren't particularly impressed, but that's okay. Yeah.
I have no right to be not impressed.
Anyway, at Auchinleck, they had this stunning long series of madams along the tennis fences.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And it was a narrow path between the house and the tennis court, and the scent was practically overwhelming. It was just so beautiful. And the flowers were stunning. They didn't look awful or burnt when they were about to fall.
Yep.
It was stunning. You can generally keep to about 2 meters height, and that's how I've seen them in the New England area. It was probably about 10 examples. Some rose books say that they can get out of hand and go to 4 meters, but I've never really seen that.
Yeah, noisette.
Yeah, one of the old world climbers.
Pale pearl pink, aging to cream, fragrant, repeat blooming in it. Yeah, 1879. Wow.
Yeah.
Madame.
So its branches are blessed with little to no thorns, which is fantastic. The foliage is practically immune to diseases, little to no black spot or mildew. and it repeats ours. It just does not shut up from spring right through to autumn.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, what I call a doesn't shut up plant. Now, for me, petals are a pearly white.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have the delicate touches of the palest of shell pinks at the center.
Mm.
And on mass, along a long fence,
the effect.
And slightly a couple of feet away, it looks pure white.
Yeah. No, it's a beautiful soft, you'd call it white with a pink undertone, sort of, I suppose. Yeah, it's absolutely gorgeous. And I know exactly that tennis court, and it is beautiful. And I think I remember you clipped those roses into the shape of a bird or something one year.
No, that was another part of the garden.
Oh, okay.
And that's another story.
Yeah,
right. There were some big, large Japanese box, 20, 30 years old.
No. You also did the Carrières.
Well,
I've forgotten.
No, maybe I did. Yeah, I remember I did Bart Simpson sculpture near it, which was I thought was absolutely wonderful.
Well, I guess
then there were two more in the garden, which I called Charles and Camilla.
Yeah.
And Camilla always looked better from behind.
No, I absolutely remember you did clip those Carrières on the tennis court into a kind of emblem.
Got it. I remember now. Yes. Lady of the garden thought, I want something at the top. Yes, I made a bird.
You did.
A phoenix rising.
It was a phoenix rising.
That's correct. Yeah, you got a great memory there.
Yeah, and I was so impressed.
That was pretty successful.
It was. And, because you'd look up at the wall of the tennis court and there was this gorgeous rose in the shape of a phoenix, literally rising. But I suppose the point is that she's so, Madame Alfred Carrière we're talking about, she's so enthusiastic, you can afford to kind of, a mature plant that's, generous in the foliage, you can cut and sculpt to a certain degree.
But John Donne said all gardening is landscape painting, which is on my business card, yeah. Anyway, we haven't got to end. Why she's so fantastic, the madam, is that she has this really, really rich, heady musk fragrance.
Mm.
And it's a scent that you will always want to return to. Just stunning. So everything about it, the foliage, the no thorns, the disease resistance, the scent, it just makes her an absolute keeper and a true bingo if you want in the garden.
True bingo.
Yeah. Now, I have no idea who Madame Alfred Carrière was. Margaret's trying to have to look it up now, but
no, I'm not.
I sort of think.
I'm not talk about it. Yeah, listeners can.
Was she a highly intelligent and glamorous woman? An academic? A liberationist? Or a suffragette? Mm-hmm. Or maybe just a mistress to some famous titled gentleman?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's great. Maybe it's great to fill in the blank spaces of a life, but her name anyway is just immortalised, even after 140, 160 years.
Yeah, she's been Okay. Oh, well.
Now you can find Auchinleck will open in hopefully next year for the New England Garden Festival, fingers crossed. You can also find another great example at the Saumarez Rose Garden.
Right. Now that's open to the public when it is open.
There's a bit of uncertainty this year because the National Trust is going to be doing some extensive building work.
Mm-hmm.
So it may be difficult to get access.
Mm-hmm.
But we hope it will open in November. Generally, it opens in November.
Right. Okay. So there's two options there. So the Saumarez, but you may have to wait till November 2025 to see the Auchinleck Garden. Open, and that will be a huge treat because that's a magnificent garden. It's changed hands and, the new owners are, I guess, building up the confidence to reopen.
It's a beautiful, extensive garden. I class it as the best garden in the New England.
Mm. I think it's, I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah. Not that I'm an expert. You are. That's why you're talking. I'm interrupting.
Yep. Yeah, so that's about it. That's Madam.
Terrific.
Fantastic. I love it. If you can find it, I think there are some at seed and nursery available. I'm not sure I'd say particular nurseries, but
I
hunt around to all the nurseries.
Yeah, and you should be able to find them. And they're not just looking at online, like the cost of living. Yeah, it's a little bit pricey, but worth it. You're not buying, you know, a risk. You're buying something that you have, but, you know, prepare. She's worth preparing the ground for and doing you.
And both these stories about pruning roses and Madame Alfred will be on my website.
Yeah, which is?
NedMcDowell.com.
NedMcDowell.com. That's so easy to M-C-D-O-W-E-L-L.
Bingo.com.
Thank you so
much. Nice and easy. Great to be here, Margaret. I'm glad everything's working now.
I know. It's a great relief to me. Let me tell you, I'm going to play your choice, Ned.